Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson.
I am Casey Clapp. I am never deflated.
Wow.
It's not true. I'm deflated sometimes.
On your tombstone, it'll say, ever inflated.
Ever inflated. You know, actually, do you know what you want? Have you ever thought about that on your tombstone? If you get the option?
I've thought about it, but I haven't come up with anything good. I want a joke on there for sure.
Yeah. That's what I want too.
Yeah.
I thought of one. It's actually a lyric by Dr. Dog.
Oh.
Yeah. It says, somebody died for my sins, and I'm sure glad it wasn't me.
Nice.
I just think that's the funniest thing, as he's dead in the ground at that moment. Yeah, sure glad it wasn't me. Nice.
I recently got really interested in last words, people's last words.
Oh, really?
I found some really good ones. My favorite being Oscar Wilde. Have I told you this one?
You might have. So tell me again.
Famously, Oscar Wilde's last words were, either the wallpaper goes or I do.
That's right. Yeah.
Funny chap. Well, Casey, welcome back.
Welcome back, Alex.
A little behind the scenes. You and I have not recorded together for like 3 weeks.
Years, yeah.
3 years. This has all been AI generated.
Yeah, exactly.
We are back in the studio recording an episode on a very classic tree, I should say.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, you know, huh, yeah. Mm.
I was going to say that this tree is sort of like annoyingly American, it feels like, you know?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
It's like apple pie of trees.
Yeah, which is funny because, yeah, it's a, yeah, I'm not sure that you know my secret.
Oh, wow.
This is great, but you're not wrong.
What a fun... Oh, my God. I can't wait to find out what the Alex, fuck you're talking about.
You're looking around panicked. What exactly is happening? What do you mean?
Yeah. Is Johnny Knoxville in here? He's going to punk me? Casey, today we are talking about the Mocky Rountain Pine.
The Mocky Rountain Pine, indeed.
And we got to talk about this tree after a quick break.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, and everyone's going to be looking and Googling during this break. Like, what the hell is a Rocky Mountain Pine?
A Mocky Rountain Pine.
Yeah, so like that too. Yeah, obviously.
And we will be right back with Rocky Mountain Pine. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man, I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6 or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well,
the
these
glare
would be great
goes
for,
away.
These would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh yeah, what did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving completely arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary, Casey. Today we are talking the Rocky Mountain Pine.
We sure are, Alex.
Which I purported might be the most American sounding tree I've ever heard of.
Yep.
Pine tree, very classic, very standard.
Yeah, like southern pine, you know?
Uh-huh.
That is like, it's in all the old folk tales from anywhere from West Virginia down.
Absolutely. I think John Denver sang about one of those.
I think they did, yeah, yeah. In fact, he sang about Rocky Mountains.
Yes, he loved those big old hunks of rock.
Oh, God. yeah, they're nice rocks. They're nice, they're big, they're great. I honestly, Rocky Mountains, they're not, I just am not.
Oh, wow. Well, Casey, let's imagine as we do every episode that you and I, how about we're hiking through the Rockies?
It sounds great.
You won't stop complaining because you think they're not as good as the Cascades. I'm freezing to death in front of your very eyes.
Well, let's go during the summertime,
okay,
Alex.
I see.
Like maybe like late spring.
We come across some Rocky Mountain pines. Casey, let's ID this tree.
All right. Well, you're gonna see this tree and you're gonna think to yourself, wow, what a beautiful tree. In fact, that tree looks an awful lot like a ponderosa pine to me.
Oh.
It's going to have this beautiful bark that you're going to see right off the bat. You know, it's of course, this is the same kind of tree that has been growing in these old vast forests that when the settlers were coming through, they always noted that these giant forests of pine trees look like parks. Just the same that we've talked about the ponderosa pine and the longleaf pine, which it probably also down the south includes your Pinus tadea, which is the loblolly pine, and Pinus eleatii slash pine. They all look very similar, but they always have these big park-like open settings.
Okay.
Because they're all fire-adapted species.
Mm-hmm.
So pine everywhere is usually a fire-adapted species. So you're walking through this forest, and you just see this boom, big pine tree, big open grassy space, maybe
sure.
A couple shrubs. Boom, big pine tree over there.
20 feet that way.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Well,
probably more like 50 feet, honestly.
Oh, okay.
And then there are these big, huge monolithic things. They got this big single stem and this gorgeous dark orangish bark that's cut up into different sections. Kind of puzzle piecey, but not super puzzle piecey as the, I'm just going to say, ponderosa pine that everyone is thinking of right now.
Okay.
Well, at least some of you.
What? Boy, you are, this is a bit of a J.J. Abrams situation. You're setting up too many mysteries without paying any of them off.
Nobody has any idea where we're going.
This is lost.
So, this tree is Pinus scopulorum.
Scopulorum.
That's the tree we're talking about today.
Okay.
We're walking through, as I said, these beautiful forests, and you're going to notice that it has long needles in fascicles of three, but sometimes two.
Okay, so it's either a two or three needle pine.
Yes, 90% of the time it's gonna be three, but every now and then you'll see one with two. So when you do an average, it's like what you say the average person has like four fingers or less than five fingers.
Sure.
Because technically if you just have one, that's gonna skew the average down from five. So this is technically an average of 2.3 to 2.7 needles, which is ridiculous.
But normally three?
Normally three. Okay. 99% of the time.
Okay.
Those are going to be between 19.4 and 22.8 centimeters long.
That's a long needle.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to figure that out in inches, divide that by 2.5.
Good.
Alex is like, nah. It's going to be about 6 or so inches.
Okay. This supports my theory that all pine needles are longer than all of any other genus.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly in terms of conifers, yeah. They always have the biggest, longest things. Yeah. And this is even the longest of them. In fact, Pinus brachydioptera goes up to 24.5.
That's absurd.
Centimeters.
It's too much.
Then Pinus ponderosa, subspecies ponderosa, 28.4.
How about that?
Yeah, interesting, right?
Are we going to find some stomatal bloom on these needles, Casey?
You know, not a whole lot, but you might find a little bit on the inside.
Okay.
Yeah, but for the most part, they're going to be nice. They're going to be green.
So this ain't no blue spruce.
They no blue spruce? No, this is the green pines that you see out in the big mountains of the Rockies, but you'll also see this as far over as Nebraska and up into British Columbia, some places in Alberta.
Great.
All the way down into Arizona, where it mixes with Pinus brachydioptera.
Brachydioptera.
I have such a hard time pronouncing this one.
Okay, Casey.
Well, let's get back to it.
Those are the needles.
Those are the needles. They're beautiful.
We've talked about the bark.
Yep. Has the same exact look over the entire tree with all these needles and the bark and the form as the ponderosa pine. Mm. So much so, you might be looking at it and saying, man, that's a ponderosa pine.
Here's more mystery setup.
Yeah,
with
you might think that. You might think that.
Okay.
Then you're, of course, going to want to look at the cones, the seed cones.
What does Frodo say to Gandalf and when they're riding in the carriage in the very beginning? Okay. I'll let you keep your secrets.
And I'm just going to sit here and puff my pipe.
And chuckle.
Yes, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want to ask. Thank you for feeding me exactly what I needed in this moment. So the cone, Alex, of course you're going to find a cone. You're going to look up and you're going to say, well, I got to see a cone. Cones are how you tell species apart.
Sure.
You'd say, well, this looks like a ponderosa pine, but the needles are just a little bit shorter than a ponderosa pine. That bark isn't quite so puzzle piecey as what I'd expect. And the cones are 68.5 to 73.6 millimeters long.
Do you know how unhelpful that measurement is?
Yes, I do.
For my brain.
So much, Alex. I'm looking at the graph and it's just as unhelpful for me. Because as I go over, I can tell you that Pinus brachydioptera is 72.4 to 77.4 millimeters long, whereas the ponderosa pine is 87.5 to 89.9 millimeters long.
In one ear, out the other.
I know.
I have no idea what you're saying.
I can only look and say, okay, which number is bigger and how significantly?
Sure.
Yeah. Now, if you want this, Alex, please go into our show notes and you can see this graph as well. It is right there.
Maybe.
As he turns around to just look right at me. Anyway.
I don't really feel like engaging with this graph.
What? Come on. You know what? I am not going to even acknowledge his presence.
That's my new favorite way to say I don't want to do something. I don't really feel like engaging with that.
I think that's
task.
Very fair. Yeah, yeah, good. Well, all this to say, the cones are just a little bit shorter, but like significantly so on average, and that's why all of these numbers are just a little bit off.
Shorter than ponderosa pine?
Yes, shorter than ponderosa pine. They are not shorter than the Washoe pine. They're about the same. They're about the same as Pinus brachydioptera, which we're going to call the southwestern yellow pine.
Okay.
Now, all of these numbers are measurements of all these different trees, and they're done over a bunch of different examples. But before I get into that, let me finally say, this is what this tree looks like. It's a ponderosa pine.
Oh, wow.
It looks like, and has been for its entire life, Alex, a ponderosa pine.
Okay.
Except one time in, I believe, 1897, it was not a ponderosa pine.
What was it called?
It was called Pinus scopulorum. And then other people said, no, that's a ponderosa pine. They're all ponderosa pine. And for our entire existence, for the last several centuries, we had the ponderosa pine, the famous pine of the Great West that recalls all the Americana that you immediately think of when you're thinking of the West.
Yeah.
The giant ponderosa pines, the junipers. You see Clint Eastwood walking through, spitting his dip over there.
That's right.
You know, you see all these characters. You have all the native peoples with their teepees underneath these big ponderosa pines out on these plains.
Yeah.
The only trees you see, that is the ponderosa pine.
And this tree is the ponderosa pine?
No longer the ponderosa pine.
Oh.
This is why I wanted to talk about this.
Oh my God, it's like a rebranding.
This is a rebranding in a very literal sense.
Wow.
So way back when, there's this quote that I love that I think I just want to say, just to kind of set the tone for what we're about to talk about.
Okay.
If you will. This is by Lemon in 1897 that I just referenced.
Lemon?
Lemon is his last name. I don't know the first one. It's a quote from this person who was a botanist way back when and looked at these trees and said this. Several so-called marked varieties of our Western conifers, I am convinced, are entitled to take rank as species. Crowding two or more marked forms into one polymorphous group, while it emphasizes the fact that they are related, gives us little other knowledge of them. We know, in this age of the world, that all groups of plants are connected more or less closely, and we believe that they are all derived from a few simple primordial forms. As we meet with the termini of these lines of development, we find them greatly diversified while also retaining vestiges of kinship. We advance knowledge of these lines, these genera and species, more by detecting and separating than by ignoring and generalizing.
Can you modernize that a little bit
yes,
for me, Casey?
Honestly, I love when people write like that, Alex. You'll hate any book I ever write. He essentially is saying, we should be splitters, not lumpers.
Sure.
Because we will learn more about the individual species by noticing their differences and acknowledging them and saying, this is different, and here is a new term, a new taxa for it.
Rather than ignoring the differences and saying, it's close enough, let's put it in this group.
Exactly. It's ponderosa pine. That one just looks different than that one.
I gotcha.
He's saying, well, if it looks different than that one, is it actually a ponderosa pine?
Sure.
And he said, this is Pinus scapularum.
Okay.
Now, for years later, everyone said, nope, there's two different subspecies. And then there are different races of those subspecies. Which
races?
Yes. You know, like you have different races of people.
Uh-huh.
That's the term they used. And I think we're trying to get away from it in terms of botany. But they needed some way to say, here's a subspecies. And now there's like varieties of subspecies.
Like sub-subspecies.
Yeah. Which
just
gets like,
interesting. Wow.
So annoying.
Okay.
So back then, they just said races.
Okay.
So there were two different subspecies of ponderosa pine. One, a more coastal version, and one, a more Rocky Mountains version.
Cool.
Then it was...
And they were separated at birth, and they were raised in different climes.
Yes!
And then they had to get together and convince their biological parents to
stay
fuck.
Together. Have you read my notes, Alex? I was trying to think about this as a Western like movie, and
no,
you just turned it into
it's Parent Trap.
Parent Trap.
100% Parent Trap.
Essentially, more recently, what's happened is that we people, scientists, taxonomists, classifiers, cladists, we have learned to use different markers called haplotypes.
Hmm.
And this is what happened to the ponderosa pine. They said, hey, okay, we get it. This is a little bit different. Let's just check below the hood. We can look at it. And if we look at all these different trees from different populations across the West, and I mean across the West, from BC, Oregon, all the way through Montana to the Dakotas, all the way over to beyond the central point of Nebraska, all the way down through Colorado to the very tip of Oklahoma, down to some little sections of Texas, all of Arizona, Mexico, California.
Okay.
This is one species with different varieties. So we ended up going and picking out a bunch of different trees, and we looked at them, and they started measuring them, and they said, okay, on average, this section over here has needles these lengths, the ones that I was telling you. Same thing with cones. And they did this for all these like subsections and subgroups where some people said, it's kind of different. I think that's a species. And some people said, no, it's just a different variety of ponderosa pine. Plasticity, and it's what it looks like.
Sure.
So they went through that, and they ended up finding via these three main things, which is the DNA of the tree itself, the DNA of the mitochondria.
Wow.
Remember, they're their own species of bacteria way back when.
The powerhouse of the cell.
Exactly. Gosh, Alex.
That's my takeaway from four years of high school science.
Perfect. That's all you need. That was exceptional.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're the energy producers. they metabolize things and create the energy to be used in the cell.
Gotcha.
You're exactly right.
Perfect.
They are the powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
All that to say, though, Alex, you remember from this podcast post high school, that they are bacteria that at some point made a connection with a cell And now they are a bacterium living within another cell.
Yes.
Doing all that work.
Sort of a chloroplast situation.
Literally, exactly.
Okay.
Yes. They, those are the two big things that everyone thinks are, in fact, two endosymbiotic events.
Cool.
Chloroplast and mitochondria.
Okay. So they took the DNA of the tree itself.
Yep.
And then the DNA of the mitochondria.
And the chloroplast.
Oh.
So all three.
All right.
And those
are... The three great houses meet.
They've all come together. Uh-huh. They said, okay. Everyone sit at this table. Where are you from? Okay. Who are you from? Okay. Where are you from? Okay. Next tree.
Yeah.
And they did this with all of them.
And they have a big red wedding event.
Oh, and then they... Yeah. And now Ponderosa Pine's extinct. So just in case you guys are interested, there's no Ponderosa Pine anymore.
I'm being a scamp today.
You're doing great. I'm happy about it.
We're back from summer break.
Yeah, you know? It's pretty much what it is. Yeah. Winter break when everyone just gets sick.
Yeah.
So they did all this really intense study and they found an amazing story of Ponderosa Pine.
Okay.
So firstly, they found that they are polyphyletic, which means that they are not one big group that's all grown up together. That there's actually separate lines that have been separated and have distinctions on what's called haplotypes.
Wow.
Easiest way to put it, it's a group of genes that are usually inherited by the next generation, and that sometimes those groups of genes are mutated in some way, but then that mutated gene then gets transferred down the line again. So if you and I are brothers, but I have mutation A in this haplotype, and you have mutation B in your haplotype, then now as we go down towards 10,000 generations, people can trace that and say, aha, look at them. They're two different lineages. But when you go back to you and me, or rather our parents, then they say, well, that was where that mutation happened. This person got the normal gene, but this one had that slight mutation. And now they can watch those and they can look at them. So these are all genetic things that we're not even going to get close to talking about in depth because A, it's way too deep. And B, if you really want to read it, there's a link in the description.
How about that?
It goes to all the show notes and you can read this fantastically, like very accessible article for what it is. To actually get all this information.
Okay.
And essentially, after doing all these measurements that I've told you about, everyone's like, okay, these are different. Some people said, nah, they're not that different. Scientists have now done the gene studies to say, yeah, they are. They're different.
Wow.
And now, based on that quote, they have said, not based on that quote, but with the spirit of
inspired
what that guy said, they basically said, this is going to hurt, but they're different species.
Wow.
There is now three different species of what we used to call Ponderosa pine.
How about that?
One is the southwestern yellow pine, Pinus brachyptera.
Okay.
Pinus scapularum, the Rocky Mountain Ponderosa pine, or I would like to call it the Rocky Mountain pine, just easy as that.
This week's tree.
Put a pin in that for a second later, Alex.
Interesting, okay.
Then there are three subspecies of Ponderosa pine, which is Benthamiana. And that's the one that grows in the Willamette Valley. That's the one that grows in very northern California, west of the Cascades, all the way up through western Washington.
Okay. A little more wetter climes.
Exactly, yeah. And then there's Ponderosa subspecies Ponderosa, which is the Colombian Ponderosa pine.
Now they're just having fun.
They are. Now they're just getting silly about it all.
Yeah.
That's the one that is the type species. That is the one that grows in eastern Washington, eastern BC, everywhere east of the Cascades, down through Nevada and Oregon, all those. That's the one that you and I are thinking of when we think Ponderosa pine.
Okay.
It's the subspecies Ponderosa.
Okay. That's why we call it Ponderosa pine?
Yeah. So this is the Ponderosa pine subspecies Ponderosa. It's the type species. It is the OG. This is what it is. Ponderosa pine.
The one that grows in the Willamette Valley. Do we just call that Ponderosa pine?
Yeah. We just call them all Ponderosa pine.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But then it's like we call lodgepole pine and shore pine, you know?
Sure.
When really we just gave them two different names, but they're the same species?
See, that's what I was going to say. Like if you're going to split all the way.
Hey,
give these things different names.
Yeah, just go for it. And that's why I said put a pin in it because I kind of want to.
Oh, exciting.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So then same thing, like Douglas fir is another character that this happened to, where we have the coastal Douglas fir and we have the Rocky Mountain Douglas fir, just two different subspecies of the same species of tree.
Okay.
So great. We call one the Rocky Mountain or the interior, and we call the other one coastal, something like that. So the last one is the Washoe pine, Pinus ponderosa, subspecies Washoensis, and it grows in northeastern California and right along the border over in Nevada. It's a tiny little grove, but they every now and then find one kind of popped somewhere else.
Interesting.
And that speaks to what this whole kind of thing is about. So when they did this intense study, they found that there was this old character, Ponderosa pine, living down with its family in northern Mexico, where it had all its other pine kin, all living the happy life.
Wow.
Living in the mountains is not such a bad time, not such a bad place. There's this giant continental plain up north.
I do feel a bit like we should be playing like...
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what I think, too. Well, the fires were warm, and every now and then you get a nice bit of rain coming through. Well, that's exactly what I feel like happened. So this is literally millions of years ago, right?
Wow.
Ponderosa pine starts moving up into this area, and this is back when, like, the plains and the Rocky Mountains were just nascent. They were just figuring out what's going on.
Wow.
But there was this giant bulbous, like, just... plume of mantle that happened underneath what we now call the Great Basin.
Mm.
It rose up thousands of feet and then it started to pull apart. Are you familiar with the Rift Valley in Africa?
I'm not.
It's essentially where the continent is ripping itself apart.
Wow.
And so the crust is getting very, very, very thin. And it's the same thing that's happening in the middle of the Atlantic and Indian Oceans, where there is essentially the crust is boiling up from like the mantle.
Wow.
It's like the thinnest part of the crust because the crust is tectonically moving away from itself. And so underneath you have this new boiling lava come up and you get this little crest of mountains. But it's almost like it's boiling up and then flowing outwards away from itself.
Okay.
But on literal tectonic timescales.
Sure.
Right? And so that's what's happening in the Great Basin right now.
It's actually quite scary, isn't it?
Oh, God. Can you imagine like speeding that up to a point where you're just like standing somewhere and the ground rips itself apart and becomes an ocean in a matter of a couple days?
Wow.
That's what's happening right now.
I mean, even knowing that it takes a really, really, really long time, I'm like, I don't like the idea. I don't want to engage
with engage.
The earth ripping itself apart.
Yeah, seriously, pull it together.
Literally.
Please. Well, so our old character, Ponderosa Pine, it started walking up to the north. It found this beautiful open plain, all of the places to grow. There's a microhabitat there, microhabitat here.
All of God's glory.
Mm-hmm. As it went up, it met a couple other characters. It met Whitebark Pine, met a character we like to call Douglas Fir.
Mm.
Then also Pinus contorta, our shore pine.
Oh.
So all these different trees
grew
up. And moved into this vast space, and they moved up during and before the Great Basin started ripping itself apart, before the Rockies and the Cascades were like truly the big things that they are now, and all the tectonic shifting and moving to create what we see today started happening, as well as all the climate coming down with glaciers and shit like that.
Hmm.
So, what happened is you had essentially this big, nice area. I don't want to describe it as like just this big open plain. A lot of it was plain-like, but it wasn't like uniform, like what you'd expect if I said, yeah, it was the big Great Plains. Wasn't quite like that.
Okay.
Regardless, Ponderosa Pine grew up and covered that entire area. Then the Great Basin started splitting itself apart, and I learned that potentially the Sierra Nevada was just the western slope of a giant plateau.
Wow.
That we now call the Great Basin that has pulled itself apart, and that plateau essentially has broken into like sections. And geographically, you can look at it and you can see that it does, in fact, look just like that.
Holy shit.
Like from this massive upper view, and there's this great Great Basin National Park video that shows what happened. And it's so interesting.
Wow.
And they're just like, yeah, just imagine it kind of like as a big balloon that kind of starts cracking piece by piece and kind of falls into itself.
Sure.
And then you can see all the shapes in the mountains today.
Wow.
That, you know, it's obviously writ large and you kind of have to use your imagination.
Sure.
But essentially, the Great Basin is now a giant section of ranges and basins. Basin meaning obviously like a big open bowl, mm-hmm. and a range being a mountain range.
Yeah.
And it used to be all together, this plain with the Sierra Nevada on the west side.
Wow.
And now the Sierra Nevada is its own thing.
Yeah.
With these big ranges way off to the east of it. Ponderosa pine, white bark pine, Douglas fir, a couple other species got Shanghai'd on one side of the Great Basin or the other, or on top of all these mountain ranges.
Mm.
And this happened while the Rockies were coming up. And then this section dried out. And essentially, ponderosa pine grew all the way up there as one species. Then everything changed, and then it got back together, and then they rehybridized after staying apart for many different generations.
Okay.
Like kind of having almost speciating and then pulling themselves back together and then rehybridizing with each other and then going away again.
Interesting.
And then again, and then again, and then again.
Huh.
So they, in my research, when they kind of were talking about this, they said, you know, a lot of people imagine speciation is this really nice distinct thing where you have this one direction of a Y and another direction of a Y. Now you have two species. And they're like, ponderosa pine really proves that wrong because it went back and forth, like hybridized, introgressed, and then separated again. And it did it over and over.
It's also important to remember that speciation, taxonomy, all this shit is man-made.
Yeah, we're making it up.
Yeah.
Maybe the ponderosa pine's like, nah, I'm not really a species. That's just my kin over there that, you know, well, that's my kin over there.
Totally.
And it does. That's it. That's all they do.
Wow.
And so now when we look at it and we look at them, we're like, okay, you clearly are related. I can see that. But you also look different.
Mm.
And then when we go through all these genes, reading through this paper, it's such a fascinating read because he's like, well, and you can clearly see that this haplotype, these genes, came from this set of genes. So like they literally call them like haplotype 5 came from haplotype 3. And that probably happened in one genetic thing where they can see it like double or triple or cut in half. Like it's a very, very obvious thing for these geneticists to see. So they look at it and say, great, that one came from this one. But then this one is way over here. But then there's this other little bit that's way up there that has come. Maybe that one came, but then there's no fossil evidence, and they're like putting this puzzle together,
Alex,
where they're using the geology, other trees that are in the same situation. They say, well, it looks like Douglas fir also has this east-west break. So does white bark pine. So does Pinus contorta. So does this one species of willow. So all these things came up, got separated, and then moved around again, had refugia, like in Nebraska, in the Great Plains.
Refugia?
Yeah, it's like an area where a species can live while everywhere else it dies out. So like the Klamath is a great example.
Refuge.
Yes, okay. Exactly. So in the Klamaths, when we were talking about our
Brewer spruce,
exactly.
Yes.
Everything around it changed, but it stayed right there.
Yeah.
Ponderosa pine did the same thing.
Wow.
Did it in Arizona and New Mexico and somewhere up north. They're not sure where, but they're pretty positive that probably happened. There's evidence for it.
This was post the breaking of the mantle, the breaking of the creation of the mountains.
Yes. This is either while that happened or just afterwards.
Okay.
So essentially ponderosa pine went up there. Then everything started splitting and breaking apart. And then glaciers came. But then as the New Mexican variety moved up and grew in Nebraska. And then glaciers came down everywhere except for this one spot in Nebraska that it kept growing. Then the glaciers receded, and then that one group from Nebraska started to fill back out in the north, but now it looks nothing like the other trees that were in a different refugia in the north because they initially came from New Mexico.
Wow.
So it was just this fascinating tale, and I'm like, you know what? I agree. This is a new species.
Interesting, Casey.
It's I know we've talked about this before. We've talked about the Great Basin, right?
Yeah.
We've talked about speciation, like how that happens and how these different things happen.
Yeah.
But this one, the story is so much thicker.
Yeah.
It just is fascinating.
Well, it's hard for me, like timeline stuff I really stick on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of these cycles where like a glacier comes down, let's say that particular one, glacier comes down, all the ponderosa pine in this one little spot are kept safe from the cold.
Yeah.
They keep growing, and then the glacier goes back up, Ponderosa pines start going everywhere.
Uh-huh.
How long would that like chunk of time be?
Well, it's variable, but you could easily think of that lasting...
I need an exact number, Casey. 50,000.
Like, if you don't give me that, none of this is real. it'd be a time frame of tens of thousands of years.
Oh, that's less than I imagined, actually.
Honestly, all this would... apparently, some of the last ponderosa pine didn't reach the north until like 4,000 to 6,000 years ago.
No kidding.
Yeah. So like, if you think about how long native peoples have been here in North America,
yeah,
that would be something like 22,000, 23,000 years is our best guess, which means it's probably a little bit more.
Okay.
That means that there were people coming across the Bering land bridge while ponderosa pine was still being like, oh, what's up here? And like moving up.
Wow.
So there's been people living here during the time it took for trees to actually migrate and then leave and then migrate back up again.
Interesting.
Because the last ice age ended about 12,000 years ago.
Yeah.
So these trees had moved up, pushed down because of the glacier, stayed that way for maybe 10,000 years or more, and then moved back up or moved back over from wherever their refuge was, that kind of thing.
So this whole event has left you a splitter.
It has left me a splitter, yeah, which is, I've always been a splitter because I collect cones, so the more species, the more cones
that's
I have.
That's right. I remember your reasoning. That's so funny.
Yeah, so it's very, very self-serving in that regard.
Well, I think it's interesting that this whole thing has left me a lumper.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because you know what?
I didn't expect that.
You know what I'm thinking?
What?
It's all just too much.
This is when you're like, I don't care if you're second cousins or first cousins. Everybody sit at the table and shut up. Stop arguing.
Yes, you're all Ponderosa.
Yeah, your soup or your chili. Fart your way to the moon.
We had this crawdad cookout to connect with each other, damn it.
Not split each other apart,
yes,
by your genes and your haplotypes.
Yeah, so I think I'm a lumper in virtue of like, that's just a little easier.
Yeah, it's just fine.
Yeah.
Honestly, unless I was trying to figure out, like, unless I was in a specific spot, because you can look at maps and you can say, okay, I'm here, this kind of tree is here.
Yeah.
It would be extremely hard for me to go out and figure out which tree is which.
See?
Because you have to measure these individual things. And of course, you're not going to have every single cone is exactly the same thing. You're going to have some ponderosa pine from this area with larger cones,
uh-huh,
some over here with smaller cones.
This is what I'm saying, Casey.
Yeah, if you have to average them all out.
Every tree looks like every tree in one species, mm-hmm, looks different.
A little bit of
and
it's
slightly different. There are, yeah, averages for all these things.
Yeah.
So is it the difference between that average and this average just a little too much to make it one big average?
Yes. You know?
Like,
yeah.
Just go for it.
I think that's exactly what it was before, which is why everyone did just go for it. They, yeah, were all like, yeah, okay, that's stupid. We're just going to call these all ponderosa pine.
Yeah.
So when they did the genetics and they could say, okay, there's actually some things backing this up, that they finally have said it. But I will also let you know that more people probably agree with you,
thank you,
than with these other pedantic scientists who are doing this.
Your ilk.
Exactly. Thank you. We are, it has not been these new names, Scopulorum, mm-hmm, and Brachdipara, are not generally accepted in different, like the Kew Gardens kind of registry of names.
Okay.
Which means it's not really accepted generally.
There you go.
So this all comes from most of this research because I was looking up for some reason this species. I think I was trying to confirm a species of cone that I collected over in Nebraska. And I was like, ooh, I wonder if this is a variety that I don't have yet. And then I looked at it and it said, oh, this is Pinus brachdiopara. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I collected almost every cone of every tree in North America. I have never heard of this. There's a subspecies. And then I read through this whole thing and I was like, oh my God. So this is in the conifer database.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, as an author, they basically read through and said, you know what? Yeah. Yeah. We're going to call this. We're going to make this call.
Wow.
And even if no one else is agreeing with us, it looks like the science and the morphology back it up. So I think you and I are in the thick of learning right now because this paper came out in like 2013.
Sure.
So this all takes a lot of time.
I was going to say it's very recent.
It is.
But I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 years. Jeez.
Mm-hmm. So I think that you're, I think you're pretty, I think it's okay for us to both be in agreement in disagreement.
I agree with you, ironically. I think that, you know, you can look at it two ways. You can be, you know, what are the scientific facts? Let's look at the data.
Yeah.
The data will out. And then the other side is like, what are the vibes?
Yes. I'm looking at the data. Yeah. You're looking at the vibes.
Yeah, I'm just feeling it out.
Yeah, bro.
That's one tree. That was our discussion of the Rocky Mountain Pine, so-called.
If it is your real name.
We got to give a rating to this tree, Casey. And it will be a different rating than our Ponderosa Pine rating.
Tree?
But I will say it will forever in my heart live with a little asterisk next to it.
Wow. Oh, my God.
But we got to do so after a break. We'll be right back. It's completely arbitrary. You know, here I am at the ripe old age of 35. And one thing that has become really important to me just over the last couple of years is privacy. Besides what I tell you here on the podcast, I basically don't want anyone to know anything about me unless I choose to tell them. And one way I up my privacy game is with NordVPN. Now, if you are like me and didn't know what a VPN was until a couple of weeks ago, let me tell you. A VPN is a virtual private network. And I said to myself, well, sure, that sounds cool, but I really don't know what it is or does. And then the moment I turned it on, I said, I get it now. A VPN changes your IP address, hides your virtual location, and encrypts your connection, which allows you to increase your privacy online. How many times per day do you get scam calls or spam email because your data got leaked somehow? I also get emails from companies saying, hey, I see you bought something with us recently. Unfortunately, we got hacked and your data is now being used to harm you. With a VPN, you do not have to worry about any of this. It secures you when you're using public Wi-Fi. It stops marketers and internet service providers from tracking and collecting your browsing history and your messages and lots of other private data. And you can change your location to any of hundreds of countries, unlocking the power of, I don't know, say, British Netflix. I didn't know how important it was until I started using one. That's the truth. So if you just want to check out the features and see if it's right for you, I bet there's something about a VPN that will surprise you. So get started with NordVPN at nordvpn.com/trees. That's nordvpn.com/trees. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link is in the description. Now go get secure.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the Rocky Mountain Pine, a.k.a. I won't say that. I'll give it its title.
A.k.a.
Casey.
Alex.
Wouldn't you know it, it's time for our review of this tree.
Let's do it.
Here's how it works. It's been a while.
Yeah, remind us. What's the scale?
It's going to give some final thoughts. It's giving final thoughts. And then we're going to give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. And just to have a little fun here, these are golden Ponderosa cones of honor.
Oh, wow. So it's just going to be the type cone.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a passive aggressive, like, here you go. And they're like, oh, thanks, my cone. Oh, wait a minute. These are 33.2 millimeters long on average. Casey, as a resident expert, we'll begin with you.
All right. So I think, Alex, that this is a great tree. I think this is great because, I should say it's great, but I like our Ponderosa Pine better. I'm sorry. I think that this one's beautiful. It grows in the kind of northern Rockies range. Mm-hmm. So when you expect to see a Ponderosa doing Ponderosa stuff, you see the Rocky Mountain, this version of the Ponderosa growing. And it's wonderful.
Kroger brand Ponderosa.
Yes, but honestly, that's the thing. I don't think the bark is as nice. I think it can be. And I think it grows in weirder places because there's just more rocks and it's a little more arid out there than you have over in the sort that grow in Eastern Oregon, for example. So I think at one point it's more compelling because it grows in weirder places with weirder forms. At the other point, it's less compelling because it doesn't have like the, oh my gosh, kind of bark that I expect from a Ponderosa pine.
Sure.
So because my cones are my own, I'm going to give this a 7.6.
Wow.
Golden Ponderosa pine cones of honor.
That's pretty good, Case.
It's pretty good. It's not great, you know? It's not great. I think what Ponderosa Pine got super high the last time we did it?
I think nines.
Yeah, one of my good friends, August, was very upset that I didn't give it 10.
Oh,
well. So we'll see what he thinks about this one.
His cones are his own, just exactly. As yours are.
Yeah, and I can tell you for sure, he's a splitter, so.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Don't get me started. 9 point, what did you say? 7.6?
7.6. Okay, I was like, all right, 9.9 by Casey Clapp. Well,
fudge the numbers.
Jeez, yeah. This is, we have a reputation here, Alex. People pay attention to this.
Take a couple votes out of my sleeve and
throw them on. Wow, now it's weighed up way over there. All right. Yeah.
Casey.
Yeah, what do you got, Alex? I know this is new old species.
Imagine this wonderful person.
Okay.
And you love them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a cousin. And you've met the cousin, mm-hmm. and they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you're like, oh man, my favorite thing about that cousin is that they're related to this person because I love this person.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not because of the cousin's personality or, you know, physical appearance. I'm just not into them. I'm my favorite thing about them is that they are cousin to my favorite person.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's a little how I feel about the Rocky Mountain pine.
Huh.
I'm like, you know what? You're doing great. Really? You're so closely related to the Ponderosa pine.
It's only because I can't tell you apart from your cousin.
Yeah, what's the better twin?
Oh, God, okay.
So, I like John Denver. So, this gets a 6 point. I'll give it a 6.8.
Wow, that's such a fall from grace for its cousin here.
I know.
Mm-hmm, 6.8.
But I will say, its story is pretty cool.
It's a really interesting story. I highly recommend everyone goes through that paper and just reads. Just go to the discussion and read through it. But it's hard to keep track of.
But it's not even the protagonist of the story. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is true. It's a side character that you care a lot about.
Yeah. So I'm a little iffy on it. What did I say? 6.8?
6.8, yeah.
6.8 Golden Ponderosa Pine Cones of Honor.
Yeah, wow. That is definitely a slap.
That was our review of the Rocky Mountain Pine. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary AMA.
All right. Ask me anything.
And if you want to ask us anything, go ahead and support the podcast at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. It's completely arbitrary premium. Become a premium member. You support the show. You get awesome rewards in return, including asking us questions for the podcast. Casey, this one is from Amanda Reeder.
Hi, Amanda.
Hello, Amanda. Amanda says, are ginkgo seeds really naked?
Oh.
And Amanda says, hi there. Can someone please explain to me how the seed of a ginkgo, the someone would be us.
Yeah.
How the seed of a ginkgo tree is considered to be naked when it contains a fleshy fruit-like coating around the, quote, nut?
Yeah.
I am struggling to understand how botanically it is considered a gymnosperm. Thanks, Amanda. Hey, Casey.
Yes, sir.
I chose this one specifically.
Yeah.
Because I've had this exact same question and this exact same dilemma where I cannot keep gymno and angio straight because to me, seeds in a cone aren't really laid bare, aren't really naked, you know?
Yes.
But they technically, aren't really clothed. See, I'm getting confused.
Yeah, now you're getting confused. I see this. I see this exactly. Now, I had the same exact thought because I was like, could not understand the difference between a cone from a conifer and an alder, quote, cone.
Yes.
Because I'm like, these are the same things. Why are these, how are these different? Like, what is the thing here?
Like an alder cone is like a fruit, right?
Yes.
Botanically?
Botanically, it is an inflorescence an infructescence.
Oh, okay.
Now, these are only fancy words to say clusters of flowers and then the subsequent clusters of fruit.
Okay.
So an alder has flowers that have an ovary with an ovum, with an actual ovule, a little teeny tiny thing inside.
Uh-huh.
Is that okay? What?
It just sounded a little bit like a woman who swallowed a fly.
Oh, yeah. It's true. Yeah. Inside that. Yeah.
There's an ovary with an ovum inside. Inside the ovum is the ovule.
Sorry. The ovum and the ovule are the same thing.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I messed that up.
No, it's okay.
Well,
Didn't know you messed it up. I wasn't trying to call you out.
Oh, no. That's okay. I realized as I said ovum, I was like, well, that's not technically incorrect, but you remember whenever you put ule in something, that makes it smaller.
That's right, yes.
And this is an ovule because it's a teeny tiny little, essentially, cell that is waiting to be fertilized by the cell that is the pollen.
Good for it.
So the biggest difference is, and this is the best way I can explain it,
okay,
is that conifers, including the ginkgo, they have their ovule sitting out in the open on a scale or a leaf, or in the case of a ginkgo, it's just this tiny little thing sitting on a tiny little shoot. Like, it's literally just open pollinated. Whereas a flower, something that's an angiosperm, mm-hmm, that ovule is tucked away and hidden inside of an impermeable zone, which we call the ovule. And then pollen has to land on another part, another flower part. We call it the style.
Mm-hmm.
Then that pollen creates a pollen tube that burrows through the style and then goes into the ovary, finds that ovule, and fertilizes it.
Wow.
That is the process.
Isn't it amazing how similar the human reproductive
system is. It's very similar.
Wild.
And that's kind of it's a big thing. People have thought about that because it helps. It's another stage of evolution. When you compare it to the conifers or the ginkgo, it's just sitting there on top of a thing. It's not that thing is like way out in the open where it's just like holding up something, hoping that a little spore or a little seed is going to land on it,
mm-hmm,
or a little pollen.
Yeah.
They can still be within a tight-knit cone where these little scales are sitting there. But in order for that to look like an ovary,
mm-hmm,
imagine instead of having if you just put your hand out flat, you put a little nickel right in the middle. That nickel would be the ovule. Your hand would be the scale of a conifer or a ginkgo.
Okay.
And you're just literally holding it out there, waiting for a little pollen grain to land on that nickel and fertilize it. Then that's happening. Now imagine that you have layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of hands, scales,
mm-hmm,
with individual nickels or maybe two nickels on each one. They're just sitting on top of that, but they're very tightly closed together because you only need to open them up just the tiniest bit to get the teeniest, tiniest little bit of pollen.
Sure.
But
the pollen is not making a journey.
No.
Like through the system of tubes,
yes,
and shit. It's
exactly.
Just kind of like landing on
it lands right on top
or
of
on
it.
The ovary,
the ovule.
Oh, shit.
Now imagine you have that nickel in your hand.
Close
your hand around the nickel,
uh-huh,
and put your thumb out.
Okay.
Now twist your thumb so your thumb's up and you're giving yourself a thumbs up,
uh-huh,
with a nickel inside.
Okay.
So your thumb is the female reproductive part of your whole hand, I suppose, is the female reproductive part of an angiosperm.
Okay.
Where now you have covered up and hidden inside of this special compartment, that little teeny tiny ovule. A pollen now has to land on your thumb, burrow through your thumb into that special chamber, then it will pollinate then it will fertilize that individual little thing.
And then your hand,
mm-hmm,
including your thumb,
yep,
will get fleshy and big.
Yeah, it becomes your fruit.
That's the fruit.
Exactly.
Okay.
So on that is that's the easiest way that I can explain the difference, where they created, I think you said it very well, the system of tubes that then forces essentially a second level of evolution, where now instead of just opening it up and having sex and saying, great, we had sex, good work, now the angiosperm say, okay, let's have sex. But then all this different pollen lands. Each one of those pollens starts growing down this tube, and now you have a literal race to see which tube is best fit and best able to get down into that special chamber to release the next little bit of DNA to go and fertilize that ovule.
Okay.
So that's part two evolution, which is why it's a little bit more fit, why they can change so quickly, because now you're basically having this two-part kind of natural selection, where now your pollen has to be good, not only you.
This is like two-step authentication.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, Alex.
As opposed to just like keeping yourself logged in all day.
Yeah, or just, you know, you always enter in your password. Yeah, so that's the difference. And why ginkgos are like that is because ginkgos literally just have their ovules sitting out there. There is no ovary concealing those little teeny tiny ovules.
Okay.
They're just sitting there ready to go.
Great. And if you want a fun mnemonic device to remember the difference between gymno and angiosperm, you can think of what Casey told me is that gymnosperms are naked seed because it's so fun to be naked at the gym.
Yeah, that's exactly it. What fun.
Thank you so much, Amanda, for the question. We hope we answered it well. And like I said, hey, if you've got a question for us, or if you want bonus audio episodes, if you want video episodes, if you want monthly cone stickers illustrated by cool independent artists sent to you every month in an envelope guaranteed to be licked by Casey Clapp, join Completely Arbitrary Tremium at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. It's the best way to support the podcast, and it really means a lot to us. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
Wow.
Great work today.
Great work to you. We've done it again. Huh?
Now, before we go, I want to ask you to think about, so maybe at the next episode, we can come up with some ideas for these other ponderosa pines. Remember how I told you that we have these new species, and you said, wait, why don't we just give them new names? In the same thing with all these little varieties, right?
Sure, yeah.
I happen to agree very much. Right now, the common name for Pinus scopulorum, which is the tree that we just covered, is the Rocky Mountain yellow pine or the Rocky Mountain ponderosa pine. I personally don't like the idea of having this ponderosa pine, that ponderosa pine, that ponderosa pine, this ponderosa pine.
So we're going to give them new names?
I at least think that we should give the Pinus scopularum and Pinus brachdipara new names.
Okay.
So that is the one that grows predominantly in the Southwest up to kind of all of Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, kind of the four corners.
Okay.
And then there is Pinus scopularum, which is the one that predominantly grows in the north, but has a bunch that grow in the south. In fact, they coexist in a lot of different places. Some are just growing in the dry section, and then 20 feet away, another one's growing in the wetter section.
Interesting.
So I just think it'd be kind of fun to come up with new names. I think Rocky Mountain yellow pine is fine, but
it's fine.
It's just fine.
It's extremely derivative.
Yeah, and the other one, I think they just call it the southwestern yellow pine or the southwestern ponderosa pine.
Yawn.
So anyway, just seed that in your brain.
Okay.
And if any of you out there have any ideas, we're taking them.
Well, I'll let the little style tube of that idea pierce my frontal cortex.
Wow, that is some intense pollination.
I propose that we give these like mafia boss monikers.
Oh, you really? Know?
Yeah.
See, I was
just have a little fun with it.
I was just going to suggest sounds. Like the southwestern one is just that whistle from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of tree is that?
Thank you so much for listening to Completely Arbitrary. Hey, we'll see you next time. Goodbye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals. If you want to support this podcast and become a Treemium member, head over to arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Thanks for listening.